This episode is brought to you by our good friends at Interactive Brokers. And are you ready to take control of your financial future? Meet Portfolio Analyst from Interactive Brokers, the free all-in-one dashboard that lets you consolidate, track, and analyze all your financial accounts in one place. You don't need an IBKR account to use it. Just connect your accounts and see your complete financial picture, investments, your performance, and allocation all in a single screen. Plus, smarter. Yeah, you can be smarter and plan smarter with IBKR's new tax and retirement planners built around the goals and market assumptions that are yours. Get deep portfolio insights and detailed risk assessments and compare performance against more than 300 benchmarks. Plus, manage with confidence thanks to GIP's verified returns. Are you ready to get started? Sign up for a portfolio analyst free for everyone at IBKR.com/freePA. Interactive Brokers, the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Member SIPC.
The disciplined investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Fed keeps rates unchanged. SpaceX announcing IPO plans. Investors are cautious on CapEx spending plans for tech companies. And our guest today is the one and only Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 958 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, it's Andrew Horowitz. It's chilly. The whole country is cold. It's cold here down in South Florida. Actually, this weekend, 30 degrees to wake up to that in South Florida when we're talking about freezing temperatures. Of course, that causes all sorts of problems for the crops down here, the oranges, and we're just not used to it. I mean, it's pretty cold. That doesn't at all compare to some of the cold that you're seeing out there. But okay, it's going to pass. Stay indoors, stay safe, stay warm. It's like anything else, whether it's a weather event or a market event, usually things resolve and things get back to normal. That's what we saw a little bit last week, right? A little bit of an event that happened after the earnings calls from the tech companies where their CapEx was pretty significant. And we also saw maybe a post-Fed letdown in that they're not going to just simply reduce rates and cut rates on a regular basis, but they're going to look for data. In fact, let's start talking about that. If I didn't introduce myself, I am Andrew Horowitz. I am the host of The Disciplined Investor and, of course, the co-host of DH Unplugged, where John C. Dvorak and I get together each week and talk about things related to, well, markets, news, and everything in between. If you want to find out more about what we do, how we do it, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll give you more information on that in a second. But let's focus in on the Fed, shall we? Let's start the show today with that because there was no change. The Fed had no change in their statement. And they said things like, in support of our goals, the committee decided to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at, again, a range of 3.5% to 3.75%. I still am in a quandary why we can't just have a fixed rate. Just say it's going to be, 3.25% to be done with it. This range thing is pretty ridiculous. Obviously, it gives them a little bit of wiggle room when it comes to who pays what and what is paid. But there we are. The Fed also said that available indicators suggest the economy the activity in the economy has been expanding at a solid pace. They said job gains have remained low and the unemployment rate has shown some signs of stabilization. At the same time, they confirmed that inflation remains somewhat elevated. Now, two
of the Fed voting parties dissented. Voting against the action was Stephen Miron and Christopher Waller, who preferred to lower their target range for the Fed fund rates by 0.25% at the meeting. So what else? What else do we have? We have, you have tariffs, right? What do we have last week? We had Canada, we had issues with China, and we had more issues with, Greenland's finally over. And then we had the potential for tariff increases on South Korea, or increases, they're not potential, I guess. And even so, the markets in South Korea, the KOSPI hit an all-time high. The day that the announcement was made by increasing the tariffs because they weren't living up to their end of the bargain on the plan and the framework that was being proposed, the market dipped 1% in the overnight hours, but picked up and ended up 3.5% higher after the president of South Korea said, you know what, hey, we're going to stick to what we're doing. Don't worry about it. A lot of those kinds of blustering and puffery that goes on that reverses pretty quickly. A few things I want to talk about today. I want to talk about the highly anticipated SpaceX IPO. It's now actively in motion. We have multiple reputable sources that are telling us and confirming that the company is preferring somewhere around a mid-June IPO. And this will be one of the largest, possibly the largest IPOs in history. They're aiming for a valuation of $1.5 trillion, which is nearly double the $800 billion valuation from the private secondary share sales that they did back way back in December. So we're talking about a month of time that this stock potential has doubled. A little less absurd. I know there's great things, right? There's great things with this. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, they are all the banks that are going to be running this thing, and they're going to run this hard. Now, the company's looking to raise somewhere about $50 billion. So there's going to be about a 3 or 4% float on the deal. And this will be the largest capital raise in IPO history, surpassing the $29 billion that we saw in 2019 by Saudi Aramco. Remember that? Everybody's like, oh, wow, that was a big one. Now, Starlink does have 8.5 million subscribers, $100 billion, or close to, $10 billion, not 100, no, 10. I don't know where I was thinking 100. $10 billion in annual recurring revenue. And SpaceX is planning to use the IPO proceeds to accelerate Starship development, build orbital data centers, which means data centers that are, they're thinking about putting data centers and things on Mars, but right now we're just going to get into space. Kind of interesting. And fund the Mars and Moonbase Alpha initiatives. What's interesting about this right now is that Elon Musk is finally going to IPO this, because he had long since wanted to keep this private due to a lot of the factors involved in what he could do, right? He has to give up some of the control here in theory. But why not? I mean, this is doubled in a month. So capitalize and rug pull is what I see coming here. We also have to discuss today Tesla's earnings. We could talk about Microsoft with Frank and all, but we have to talk about that. I thought that while the earnings were okay on Tesla, there was this really moment when the revelation that the S and the Y are no longer going to be in production. And you can't have sexy without an S or a Y, right? Right? S or X. Sorry. Let me correct that. It's S or X, not S or Y. The S and the X. Still can't have sexy without the S or the X. But the other thing that was really, I thought, huge was the spend that's going to be taking place on chip manufacturing and warehouses for that, and the change to really focus in from the production of the cars that are bringing in revenue, right? The S and the X, to building humanoid robots and robotaxis. And we don't even have any idea of the TAM or the potential revenue from the robots and probably from the robotaxis. Everybody's all shot up and excited about the robotaxis, but we don't have an idea really of what the reach is for that. But we're going to get on all this. We're going to talk to our guest about this. I want to make plenty of room for discussion because, you know, when Frank and I get together, there's a lot to talk about, not a lot of room for each other to talk because the other one is talking about what's going on. But with the information flow from Frank is incredible. Of course, the show notes, everything that you want to find out about Frank and about what we're doing here, you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I mentioned that we have plenty of information on there, the strategy on there, you know, for clients. And I would encourage in these particular uncertain times, there is no better time to get a second opinion on your portfolio. And yes, our portfolios have been doing great this year. There's some good things that are happening internationally with commodities and all that. And maybe yours are too. But at the same time, you know, things happen. All of a sudden, investments go a little sideways. Markets go crazy. VIX pops to 20 like it did on Thursday. And all of a sudden, there's a change. We've been riding along a wave for a long period of time here, folks. We know this. You know this. Of nothing matters. Just let's push it in. Every dip is to be bought under all circumstances. There is no variation to that rule. That's the theory that's in the markets. That's how we see it. But again, there's no better time for a second opinion on your portfolio. Head over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and check it out. Now, before we get to our guest, I think it's important to know and to bring this up again that Interactive Brokers has key competitive advantages for sophisticated and disciplined investors like you. IBKR's margin loan rates, listen to this, are from just 4.14% to 5.14%. In fact, IBKR was rated one of the lowest margin fees by stockbrokers.com. Did you know that? I want you to compare IBKR's clients' low margin borrowing cost to other brokers like Schwab or E-Trade, Fidelity, Vanguard, who charge hundreds of basis points above IBKR's low rates. Listen, the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers, and margin is only for experienced investors with a high risk tolerance because you may lose more than your initial investment. Rates are subject to change. Get started today at IBKR.com/compare. That's IBKR.com/compare. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC. Now let's bring in Frank. He's an equity analyst with close to 3+ decades of experience covering small and mid-cap stocks. He's a newsletter. We actually have the link to his free trial of his newsletters over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com for show notes, episode number 958. He has been the editor of several well-respected newsletters with major companies, as well as one of the top performers with thestreet.com, where he significantly outperformed the markets during his tenure. He was also a research analyst. Did you know this? For Jim Cramer. He's also a host of the really great podcast called Wall Street Unplugged. Frank dives deep. This is what I like about him and why I bring him on. He goes deep into trends of some of the things that are happening right before our eyes and some of the things that are undiscovered, finding what I think is great opportunities for all of us. So let's bring him right on. Frank Curzio, so welcome back. Frank, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, buddy?
Good. I know you're just back from Vancouver, so you're used to the cold, although you live in warm Florida, but it's not as warm as it was. I was talking about that at the top of the show, how it's going down to the 30s this weekend and, you know, throughout the weekend it's going to stay there and then into next week. But how is Vancouver?
It was nice. It was in the 30s there, right? So, and I think we're getting 19 degrees. It's pretty crazy. But, but it was amazing because this is a mining conference that I've gone to pretty much for the past 10 years, been covering the sector around 15, have great contacts in it, some of the biggest names in the industry. And it really been a, a, a crap show for a while, right? And even last year wasn't really that good. This year it was insane. I mean, it took me 20 minutes to get my badge. It felt like there was 1,000 people there. These people paid $2,500 each. It was jammed. It was very, very packed, standing room only in a lot of the speakers and presentations. And good for them, right? I mean, they're doing deals. Yeah. They're rocking and rolling. I mean, everything's on fire. On fire is probably, I'm not doing it justice by saying with silver, like, you know, triple digits, gold. I mean, was it going up?
Was this like a big, like back in the days of, you know, major tech rallies and Bitcoin bros kind of thing that everybody's excited because the mining is just off to the races right now?
It's just off to the races. And I don't think it's for the reasons that people are saying where, you know, you have high deficits. We've had high deficits since the 70s every single year, right? It just gets higher and higher no matter who's in office. You know, you have this end of the world. I think it's more about the policies of Donald Trump where it's more, you know, a little bit of protectionism. And, you know, you're seeing demand in these sectors and you're seeing rotation. You're seeing, you know, you don't have to worry about de-dollarization or anything like that and craziness. You're going to, you know. But you are definitely seeing a rotation where central banks are buying more gold, more silver, and you're seeing the retail investor come in. And the retail investor, is getting bigger. I think it's, 20-25% of trading activity, I think I saw Morgan Stanley say a couple weeks ago.
But the thing that people, it's interesting you mentioned that, because the thing that I believe that people don't really understand is that 25% can act as a very big crowd, and that doesn't mean it's 25% of the daily trading. The institutions can be sitting on the sidelines for a minute, twiddling their thumbs, not actually investing in silver at the moment. And that 25% hoard, if you will, right, is actively investing in it for one reason or another and moving things dramatically. So that 25% is a big crowd that can, you know, especially if maybe even 10% can be a big crowd. If it's really going on momentum. But let's talk about silver for a second, because we know that so this renewed momentum, excitement, and the drivers of strength, you talked about a few. Is it the idea that we have uncertainty? Is it the idea of deficits, the dollar, seeing a debasement and devaluation of the dollar? But there's some talk about the back to the silver as a metal for industrial use. And more importantly, two things in particular. One, it's the idea that silver is, used in semiconductors and the more machines we have for AI that are being generated by various companies, et cetera, or the chips, et cetera, that silver is going to be used. But two, this unproven idea that silver can be used in a mixture and compounding to create longevity of the lithium ion batteries that causes them not to have to be thrown out or extracted from a car after a certain period of time, thereby making batteries pretty much, have a much, much, much longer shelf life. So talk on those two topics.
I don't know if it's so much. I mean, the fundamentals that are taking place right now are different. And that's why people are so used to saying this is a cyclical market. Well, it's a cyclical market. You could base cycles on whatever, right? At the economy. When it comes to these metals and commodities, it was the worst cycle we've seen, I want to say, in at least 40 years. And this is from people I've talked to have been in the industry for 40 years, like the Rick Rules and the Quartermains and stuff like that. So, Frank Justers, these are all stars that have been in this industry forever. And when you're looking from 2011-12 through 2021, really, I mean, this is a market where gold went higher, gold stocks and silver stocks got annihilated. It's usually every 3-4 years. That's a long period. But now you could argue, I wouldn't call this a secular market, but this cycle is going to be prolonged. I think much longer than everyone believes. I came back from the conference. I saw these guys speak. A lot of them were like, you should be taking profits. In all fairness, they said that 6 months ago when silver was 70 and 60, and it's, you know, well over 100 now. And, you know, gold was at least $1,200 less than where it is now, you know, well over 5,000. So it's different because the dynamics where you have the policies of the current administration with Donald Trump, that's significant, right? It's more U.S.-based, okay? So, you know, it's worrying other countries where you could just raise tariffs. Okay, we need alternatives, okay? And that's something that's not going to change, right? So that's something for the next 3 years. That's different than, okay, we're seeing our deficits go up to $40 trillion and all this stuff, right? Deficits continue to go higher. But also the AI trend is very real. And now when you have administration that's saying, hey, these are critical metals, the rare earths, you're looking at gold, you're looking at silver, you're looking at copper especially, right? And then you're looking at uranium. And not only are they critical metals, we're understanding that if we're going to grow and AI is this massive, serious trend that I still feel like most people don't understand how big this trend is, that we're going to need access to these metals without any interference, where we could have, you know, 90% or whatever taking place in China. We need to get them done here. So they're taking stakes in actual companies, which adds to this bullish thesis of these metals, where now the biggest risk is getting these mines developed, right? The biggest risk is the funding part. Now you have the government coming in, writing loans, and then you have private equity. That gives private equity opportunity saying, okay, we have the government backstop here. Now we could go in. Usually permits take 10, 12 years. That's going to accelerate the process. This is a different market for commodities than we're used to seeing. And I think this is going to be prolonged at least for the next, you know, you can go into 3, 4, 5 more years, even longer for this, where maybe you're going to see the pullbacks in gold. Silver, I think, a little parabolic right now and could pull back 30% and still be up tremendously over the past 12 months. But I think you're just going to see this prolonged, where any pullback is going to be met by a buying opportunity for gold, silver, especially copper and uranium.
It's interesting because there has been that going on already, where there's a bit of a pullback here and there, whether it's because, and in fact, I think the CTFC changed their requirements on margin, where it was a dollar amount. Now it's a percentage deal, which changed things because they were going to have to actually, in theory, they'd have to start increasing margin rates like daily by the kind of moves that we're seeing. They're not used to these kinds of moves. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw this back when there was the cornering of the silver market back when by the Hunt brothers. Remember that? You know, kind of trading places kind of story. But you talk about, and you said this several different times, the policies of Donald Trump. So just give me a quick down and dirty on what you're talking about.
The government taking stakes in companies, putting these critical metals on these lists where you're saying, okay, these metals are critical. It's a threat to national security. We need these metals because of AI, and AI is going to run the future.
So what we do is, by the way, what we do is, so now our policy is either use the brute force of the United States government to buy into companies, or use the brute force of the military threat to take stuff that we want. Is that how kind of we work now?
You know what? I guess, and for anyone listening to this podcast, no, but listen, if you want to go there, there's a million podcasts and politics, and you could have fun and hold up signs and run into people and get pissed off. We have a job here, you and I.
We
have to make money on stocks.
No, but I think people need to know what the base policy is so we can understand what to do. Therefore,
the base policy is this, is that the government is going to continue to take stakes in companies that they deem that these metals are critical and that we need these things. And that includes, you know, more fabs, and that's why the Intel deal went in. Now you can hate this and say this is so different. This is socialist as an investor.
I don't like it only because I was told not to like it for years by our government. Our governments for the last 50 years, I'll say 20 years, have been all about, you know, the whole idea of state-owned industry is bad, right? That's not capitalism, and how do we do such a thing? We're going to fight that, and we're going to go against that, and we're going to put tariffs against China because their trade isn't unfair, and then we're like, okay, well, let's just do that too. It's very confusing to investors, I think.
I don't think it's very confusing at all, to be honest with you.
Really?
I think invest in the companies that the government's investing in. It's very simple.
Okay, well, that's not confusing, but it's confusing how they changed their tune, is what I'm saying.
And
more so, Frank, just one more thing, and then I'll let you talk about this. What happens in the next administration? Do they purge all that?
And that's a good question. You have a 3-year runway for this, and that could happen. And I think if that's going to happen, the Democrats need to move way away from the left because the policies that they have right now are just not supported to the point where, you know, if you don't agree with their policies, they destroy your life. Right. And that's right. And you see that because you have Elon Musk, who's a Democrat, who went Republican. You have Joe Rogan. I mean, these are huge, right? You had, you know, the crypto community,
President
right?
Trump. President Trump is a Democrat.
I mean, you had the crypto community Democrat, and then they tried to shut down that industry, Trump used to his advantage. So it depends what they want to do, but it's the current policies that people are never going to adopt what's going on right now. Yeah. And they need to go more back to the middle if that happens. But that's certainly a risk. That's a risk 3 years from now. But right now, what Trump is doing is saying, okay, America first. A lot of countries have been taking advantage of us, which is a fact. You can look at the deals and all the deal flow. And you know, we're the biggest country in the world. We should be getting the best deals. People shouldn't be taking advantage of us. And that's why everybody's kind of bending the knee to us and saying, okay, we're not going to do this. We hate the U.S. And all of a sudden a deal works out. And again, if you listen to the media, they're going to blame that on Trump and whatever. But the bottom line is, we've said this for many years, and we have been on your podcast even to 16, 17 and all this tariff nonsense. And we always say, use it as the greatest buying opportunity ever. And you made a fortune listening to us. That's going to continue to happen, right? And when we're the biggest, best country in the world with the biggest economy in the world, right? We could buy our goods anywhere. And it's going to be more expensive if we go outside of China. Yes, it is. But they can't sell their goods anywhere, right? And that makes us very, very powerful. And he's using that as leverage, which is why you're seeing, you know, gold, silver go high. A lot of countries buying, starting to get off the dollar and sell some of their dollar holdings. They can't obviously get out of it completely and destroy their economies. So, you know, with that, and also, again, politics aside, my job is to make you money. If you're looking at what they're doing, look at the Intel deal and how much they're up on already. Look at almost all these rare earth deals. It cuts the tape. I don't think it's fair, and I don't like it politically, right? I don't like it. I'm just saying that it's going to make these rare earth miners develop much more quickly, which they weren't even on schedule. They weren't even on the map to get developed in the next couple of years. Yeah. And that's huge because we need these metals, and that's going to make these companies go higher and higher. And I think the government next, you're going to see him taking stakes in uranium companies that are pro-American with mines here. You got UEC, you got Encore. Those are two that I think have tremendous upside. They're already up tremendous.
What's the symbol on Encore?
Encore is, what is the symbol on Encore?
So there's Cameco, but that's Canadian, right?
No, yeah, it's Canadian with so Encore, because I don't know if it trades. I think it might have,
let's see.
Yeah, seems.
I'll look it up as you do it. Encore.
It's so funny because I actually own this for like 10 years and I just never looked at it. So it's EU is a symbol.
EU. Yep.
EU.
So what about, you know, one of my theories is that, and we just started investing in this for clients, by the way, mm-hmm. Through our managed growth strategy, TDIMG. And the idea that quantum computing, for this reason, let me tell you the reason. The thesis is that if you don't have this under wraps and it actually comes into fruition, if other places have it, especially the black hats and the other guys out there that we don't want to have this, they can basically in a second de-encrypt the entire Pentagon and rip right through all of our stuff. And therefore, from a security standpoint, we need to have companies owned by, not controlled, but pieces of, so that the government could really have that protection. Thoughts?
I think that trend is very, very far out. And if you're believing in it, then the biggest beneficiaries are going to be Broadcom, AMD, and NVIDIA, who have to supply the chips, which are going to need even faster chips than are available today, which, you know, NVIDIA is the king of those. That would be the best way to play it and the best in terms of risk reward profile. But, you know, very far away from that. And, you know, a lot of this stuff isn't going
to
happen.
It's actually a safe way to play it, Frank.
A safe way to play it.
That's a safe way to play it.
A safe way to play it.
I mean, if you want to do it, you have like... Yeah, you have D-Wave, you have IonQ, you have Rigetti and a few of these other guys that are out there. Plus, mm-hmm. of course, some of the major names also that kind of are doing this, even IBM for that matter, right, mm-hmm. with some of the systems.
And remember, the amount of power that's going to be needed, we have a massive energy crisis right now, more massive than anybody believes, other than the hyperscalers and the White House. And this is why they're taking stakes in companies, because we need rare earths, we need the energy, we don't have the energy, we're modeling it, all the models are dead wrong. I've been studying this for 3 years, they're dead wrong. They're modeling on large language models. And we all know large language models takes up much more energy compared to the normal Google search. And they're all modeling out for the next, this isn't modeling out for 10, 15 years. We're talking about 3-4 years, right? And what they're not modeling out right now, and you could listen to last week of Meta's call of agentic AI is here, right? It's here. You have bots doing everything for you. And when you have agentic AI, this is autonomous. This isn't large language models where you put in a couple of prompts. That's, okay, that takes a lot more energy, but that's what it's being modeled on. And if you're looking at agentic compared to large language models, it's using probably 30 to 60 times more energy.
Just to be, I need to stop you because this is a really important point here, and I don't want to gloss over this. But basically what we have is the let me just kind of give a little bit, and then I want you to fill in some of the blanks here. Mm-hmm. What we had first was Google search, which is, okay, hey, I'm interested in this recipe for this. Can you tell me this? And you get a billion results. And you got to search through those to figure out what you want. And then you had the sponsored. You had to kind of weed through those. And then you figured out, okay, and then you have to look through 20 things. You are the person in charge of your own destiny after you get mm-hmm. your basic information. Mm-hmm. Then we have these large language models, which basically sucked up all this stuff. And by the way, I didn't get my thank you letter from Google or Facebook or anybody else for utilizing my data. But anyway, mm-hmm. you're welcome. As is anybody else listening, they took all that and they then created this massive process to do what you did, bake it down into usable features. And that's where you just get that answer right in front of you, right? Next stage. is when the computers are able to actually think independently to a degree, not act, but at this point, that's called inference. Inference is kind of the next thing. We're on the cusp of that right now. Some say we're there, by the way. And inference is that next level of AI, which makes computing or makes the AI a smart, a intelligent, and I don't want to call it sentient because it's not, but an intelligent being, if you will. So it can actually do some thinking, reasoning, and all that. Your next level in the Holy Grail is agentics. Agentics is taking all of that, the reasoning, the thinking, and all that, and then making decisions almost on their own, which you start thinking about Terminator. You start thinking Terminator.
Scary.
Yeah, but that's what you're talking about. You're talking about that. So instead of using an ounce of water for a Google search and the cooling down of all the facilities and the large language model search, which is your OpenAI ChatGPT using a cup of water or so of that, into next inference, which is maybe a half a gallon to maybe 3 gallons of water for agentics kind of activity and action. And all of that requires energy. So you think about the differential between all that. You're talking about something that is multiples and actual, you know, factors above, right?
I mean, here's the stats. It's 0.3 watt hours of electricity for a typical Google search. You need 25 times more power for a single ChatGPT query. And then if you're using agentic AI, which is the next step, and that's what they're modeling on. They're modeling at 25 times more power. If you go to agentic AI, it's 79 times more power than large language models. So let's put some numbers behind it really quick and make it simple. If you're looking at Goldman Sachs and you're looking at McKinsey, two well-respected companies that have forecasts, they're forecasting anywhere from, by 2030, around 100, 125 gigawatts of electricity. Gigawatts of electricity. If you model it based on agentic AI.
Is that per year?
No, that's by 2030. So that's the full capacity of what we're going to need to support our requirements.
Okay. That's what we're going to need in facilities to pump out.
Yes, to pump out. And this is just the AI, right? So this is, to put in perspective, we have like 80 right now. And they say it's going to go to, we're going to need, there's estimates up to like 150 to 200. If you include agentic AI, it's more like 327. And the difference between that is trillions, tens of trillions of dollars in spend. And we don't have the capacity on the grid. And that's why you're seeing these deals by hyperscalers that I've never seen anything like it in my life. They're going to open up Three Mile Island, which is 5 years away, and hopefully you get state, local, federal approval, which is going to be very, very hard to do. After that, Microsoft is signing a 20-year contract to lock in that energy for 20 years. You have Oklo, it's not generating revenue. They don't have scalable SMR technology.
Amazon's in there, and there's another deal done, and pumping all sorts of money in. It's still unproven, by the way.
They have no choice because there's no energy out there. They need portable energy because there's not enough on the grid. And this is where you see, that's why uranium is going through the roof, right? And, you know, another alternative. So, you know, we need this energy. It's why if you look at natural gas turbines, this is the first time it's happened in history because I hate alternative energy as an investment. You lose 99% of the time on alternative energy, right? Whenever you're getting it subsidized, you lose. And we've seen that throughout the years. It's not a long-term strategy. You could trade them all you want. I'm just saying, buy them long-term. We just spent $10 trillion to build solar over the last 10 years, solar and wind. And it's literally the same percentage as, you know, fossil fuels that we're using over a 10-year period, but we wasted $10 trillion. Those are facts. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at solar, this is the first time, not solar panels, right? Because we've seen subsidies come down on those. When it comes to battery storage, solar companies for the first time are economical. These companies are going to be on fire pretty soon. And I've never recommended solar companies, but solar companies have focused on battery storage. Okay, Shoals is one of them. That's a good company. You can look up a symbol for that. Just doing a lot of research on these things. There's not a lot of them, but those that are focusing, look at their numbers. They're going to pay dividends. They're buying back stock because it's first time, it's economical. It's cheaper than natural gas turbines when it comes to this electricity because it's disrupting the entire market. Electricity prices are going through the roof. I have great contacts that build these data centers for the hyperscalers. I got some that are on the boards of electricity telling me the Microsoft deals that they're signing are 15% increases over the next 3 years, and they're signing in 1 second. So
some of these companies, like if you look at the Invesco Solar ETF, it owns things like First Solar, Enphase, GCL, Sunrun. Are these not the names we're talking about? You're not talking about the generals because, I mean, First Solar is just down. These are all down a lot.
Yeah, they're down a lot because, you know, if you're looking at some of these companies, let me see if I can find just a short list for you guys. Let me see. this way and get, because, you know, the research, let me bring up the research. I didn't know I was going to go there in this interview.
We go deep.
No, we go deep. And this is, you know, we don't have like a whole schedule of stuff. So, you know, which is cool. But this is, so there's two companies I would definitely recommend. And let me get to them right now. So you have Shoals, which is one, mm-hmm. and Next Tracker is another one. So NXT.
Yeah, so NXT is in the solar ETF, but that's, you know.
Yeah, look at NXT. And I mean, we recommended these companies in September and October, and you know how bad solar is doing. Shoals is up 35%. Next Tracker is up 33% for us. Those are two.
So the differential here, what you're saying is that these solars have the capacity to actually also store.
Battery storage. Yeah. Yes, they have battery storage technology, and these are two of the leaders. So right. Next Tracker, NXT and SHLS. Those are two companies. And if you could see, look at those compared to the rest of the solar companies. These guys are going to be printing money for decades because now it's actually cheap. Never thought I'd say that about solar. Again, I never really recommend solar in my life, I don't think. But these are two companies that we're doing great on because when the dynamics change, the fundamentals change, you got to be willing to change.
I think also the other thing is that even if there is so much need for energy going to be in the future, assuming we stay on the same trend and track, right? Mm-hmm. Assuming this all happens and all of a sudden it doesn't be like one day somebody says, ugh, forget the AI, let's move on to the next thing. But assuming we go through this and it continues on the same trend of track, there's going to be a lot of energy needed. And whether that is going to be completed by nuclear, whether it's going to be completed by some other, who knows, magic, right? You know, fission, fusion, I don't know, whatever. The fact of the matter is that this, even as a complement to the other energy sources, is going to be beneficial. Solar.
Yeah, beneficial, absolutely. I mean, you have to find, I mean, when you see companies like Oklo that are signing contracts and this stock is absolutely through the roof, whatever the valuation
is. We had this last year. Billions. We had SMR and Oklo for our clients last year. I don't even want to talk about how much money it was made. It was absurd.
I mean, they're signing deals, right? They got big backings by Peter Thiel and stuff. So, right. So you know, you're looking at some of these companies. What I love is I was able to invest in Bloom Energy in the 20s. That's a company.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah, so Bloom Energy has done well. And this is, they're signing deals. They have great, great technology. So, you know, solid oxide fuel cells. And this is actually, like, they have a model, which they're much far advanced, where they can produce this at scale now. And now you're seeing them get tons of contracts. They just signed a $2 billion contract with American Electric Power. So,
AEP.
You know, there's some of these names that are incredible. Anybody that owns megawatts, and this even goes for the Bitcoin miners. So Bitcoin miners, that's called tier one. What they're doing is they're transferring from tier one to tier three. Why would they do that? Because each megawatt tier one, which is Bitcoin mining, is roughly $1 million. It's 15 times more when you convert them over to tier three. And you have the biggest companies in the world with the deepest pockets that are in dire need of energy. So if you have companies like that, you're going to do very well. DGXX is one, DigiPower. They own a ton of electricity. We've been in this since a dollar. It's three, one of its highest six and came down a little bit. And this is a company that's in this transition, pretty much ahead of most of these Bitcoin miners. They're sitting with a full capacity of 400 megawatts of power, and they're going to convert a lot of this over. They own the actual power. They have these assets that are probably worth three times the price of the stock right now. This is what I'm looking for in terms of energy in the sector. Anyone that has megawatts is huge.
All right, huge. That's good stuff. Love it. I want to continue on with this AI that I want to segue into. I want to talk about private credit because I have some things that I just... some things that make you just go, what's going on there? And I want to talk about some of the earnings season, but let's continue on with this discussion, this idea of, are we in a bubble or not? Now, we saw some earnings come out from various companies. Some are really good. Like Facebook is, going back on their spend spree, huge amounts of money they're spending, but they're making some real headway. One of the things that really was interesting in the conference call last week was the discussion about how they're flattening and, streamlining their various teams, where it took maybe a team of 20 to do something for a while. They're flattening down to one. And there's a whole, I don't know if you've seen this whole undertone in the markets about leaders of companies coming out and talking about, and specifically pounding the pavement about, that AI is not going to reduce headcount, right? This whole idea, which makes no sense to me. But, you know, I don't know if they're doing it just to make sure people don't freak out. You know, keep working. Don't worry about it. When we get the machine to do your job that you do exactly right now, don't worry about it. We're not going to fire you. Why would we do such a thing? No. You know, because if they did, then people would be like, I'm going to slow roll this. I'm going to make this take 20 years to develop. CapEx spending on companies, we're talking about $60 billion now into OpenAI from various bunch of players now. And also we saw that SoftBank is possibly doing $30 billion, which is questionable whether that's included in the $60 billion. Microsoft is going to be spending. Microsoft got hit down about 12% after their earnings. People are getting very concerned about spending in some areas, right? The overspend. Do you think we're at a point, an inflection point, that where we were before was, oh my God, they're spending. That's great. We'll ride the stock up. Now it's like, wait a minute. This spend is now a concern because we don't know how much we're going to recapture. And the big question that came out last quarter or so with OpenAI promising everybody and then the poster child of what was really going on, which was Oracle falling from grace. Mm-hmm. Is that something or is that all just garbage?
I think there's good, this massive separation that we're seeing, right? So when we look at, this is why Microsoft got tanked. Microsoft said, this is the reason why it tanked, purely. They're spending more money and their margins are going lower next year. Okay?
That's not a good combination.
Meta, on the other hand, remember Meta, they always used to increase spending and the market punished them. They never punish them anymore because those guys spend money and they return more money on their investments than anything I've ever seen, right? I mean, they bought, Instagram for $2 billion. Remember that? I don't know if you remember that. They wanted it to crucify Zuckerberg.
Well, that's when he was doing the Metaverse. He was doing the Metaverse and he was like, okay, where's the payoff here?
No, not even the Metaverse. I'm talking about Instagram. Instagram for $2 billion, right? And they made fun of him and they said, you should kick him off and he's not a good CEO. That's, what is it, $800 billion asset at least now. I mean, it's insane. I mean, these guys spend, they know what they're doing, but for people who are saying this, and I think it's a story and people just read stories without looking under the hood like we do, at least what I do. When it comes to fundamentals and stuff like that, I know you do it as well, but to tell me that this isn't benefiting the companies, look at what they're reporting. They're reporting record profits across the board. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I know I've been doing this for a long time, 30 years. You've been doing it probably just a little bit longer. Have you ever seen a market at all-time highs where these companies are reporting profits at all-time highs and they're actually laying off employees? Why do you think they're doing that? Because AI is working.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. So for them to think about this and the Fed actually to come out last week and Powell say, well, you know, just like regular, you know, technology and you know, we see these trends where you lose some jobs and you gain some jobs. I'm going to put this in simple terms. Doing this for 30 years, I've never seen a trend in my life where you can't see the scalability. Okay. So what does that mean? It means when you scale, you always want to scale. It's great for business. Okay. So you create the iPhone. You're like, oh my God, this is a great product. We're going to scale. Well, you could see the scalability because only everyone who's alive could own an iPhone, right? So you see the end of it. Okay. This is the amount of people. This is your total addressable market. You cannot see the end of the scalability for AI yet. Like the productivity gains that you've seen are almost infinite. They keep going better and better and better. And that's why you're seeing these companies continue to increase their spending. They were spending $70 billion a year ago. Now they're spending, you know, Meta came out and said, we're spending $125 billion on AI, $165 billion total.
This next year. This next year.
Right? So and you're looking at probably up to over $600 billion from the top six. You got the top four, which you guys probably know. But then you throw in, you know, Oracle and Alibaba. You know, $600 billion in a year they're spending on this.
Just to put that in perspective, but people, to be absolutely clear, that is a butt ton of money. Seriously, that is an absurd, that is more than some GDPs of countries around the world. It is a huge amount of money.
I think it's $125 billion is the cancer market, basically, is $125 billion a year.
Right.
So just to show how bigger this is.
And
right?
By the way, this is also money that is not being put in for instant gratification, right? This is not like we're buying stuff and it's going to give us a X-fold benefit because of this or that. This is kind of, this is just an installment, right? This is an installment plan that's maybe another bunch coming next year.
Well, here's the biggest transition. And this is something else I bet that's, you know, original thesis where everybody wants to get into AI, right? Like a year ago, 2 years ago, holy shit, we need to get into AI. Yep. It's the biggest thing ever. And now what you're seeing is companies saying, wait a minute. Okay, even if we create an AI department, you're going to have Google come by and say, okay, hey, you guys are really good. We're going to basically poach the whole and spend, you know, $10 million, which is like a penny to us, right? I mean, these companies are generating $80 billion a quarter right now. Mm-hmm. Microsoft just generated, right? And they'll poach everyone from you. So what they're doing is they're going to Google and they're saying, hey, we want to use all your AI services. And Google says that even better. You can use all our cloud services. What we want is the APIs. We want the kings of the kingdom. We want access to all of your list, which is... Right. Hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions, sometimes hundreds of millions, depending on a retailer. and saying, we'll work with you. We'll create models. You can use our whole entire AI system. And every time a search comes up, it comes up immediately. You can use Gemini 3.5. And you're seeing these deals. That's the next wave where I think it's an easy layup to make money in AI. Have you seen the chart of Wayfair? Have you seen the chart of Dollar Trees and dollar stores? Have you seen the chart of Gap? Have you seen it? Mm. All those have one thing in common. They all sign deals with either Google or OpenAI to run their AI services. And look at those charts of those stocks and how much they're up. I mean, granted, you know, the market's come down a little bit last week. But once they did that, they're basically saying, okay, instead of competing, now we're going to partner. And it's almost like the NVIDIA thesis from 10 years ago that no one loved to do in technology. I'm not partnering with anybody. I keep my own IP. And NVIDIA said, look, we're going to partner with everyone in the world, right? And build our own systems, not just the hardware, but the software around this, right? And that's why they're so big in 4.0 trillion, whatever, you know, market cap. So you're seeing a lot of these companies, like an Under Armour. You look at like crappy retailers that want to learn more business. Instead of these companies, all these companies building their own AIs, they're partnering with the hyperscalers, which is making them much, much bigger, which is generating more money through their cloud. And now they can offer services where, hey, okay, now someone's going to want something. Etsy just to sign a deal. I bet you're going to see Etsy stock go through the roof. Etsy, right? You're like, really, Etsy? But now, if you look at the deals that they sign, any product that you're going to list or that you go, it automatically, it gives you a one-click buy to Etsy if it sells it. One-click buy right here. Here's how you buy it, boom, in 2 seconds.
No, the whole thing would be not only that. It would be, you know, that you have a party coming up and the system, you know, your birthday coming up, a 50th birthday for somebody, and you get presented with, you know, a very refined Etsy customized plaque, I don't know, for somebody. That comes up in your, you know, your AI daily look-see.
Yeah.
And then you click it like, yeah, that's good. I'll buy that. Or three or four different sites, by the way, that have similar ones that you could buy and check the prices. Like, for example, it'd be very nice to have a really good rideshare comparison tool that could tell me Lyft or Uber so I don't get ripped off by either of them when I order something.
Yes. Exactly. And listen, I'm not saying that, oh my God, everything. I'm just saying AI is not even close to being a bubble. If it's in a bubble, one, we have great contacts that build these data centers. Once we know this isn't, you know, an ego thing, this is just a data thing, right? Look at how much these companies are spending, their increase in their spending. It means that this trend is going to continue for a while. Doesn't mean all the stocks are going to go higher. If you look at NVIDIA, Microsoft, even Meta, after its move, all three of those stocks are down over the past 3 months, with Microsoft being down 22%. So people are like, this is going to blow up. I would say Microsoft down 22% is kind of like a blow up, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to see this rotation. And the rotation, I think, is the layup is one, you're seeing AMD do better and you know, catching up a little bit, still not even near NVIDIA, but you're seeing that momentum. You're seeing, you know, great out of Broadcom. So there's just a separation. And as you go along this AI trend, look what's happened to the memory companies, right? When you're looking at you know, the Western Digitals, the Seagates, the Microns, like out of nowhere. Have you seen those charts? Holy cow, that's the next stage. Oh my God, these prices are going through the roof because of AI. You know, Oracle was late to the party. So it was Dell was a little bit late to the party and their stock did well. And some of those are pulling back. So you're going to see separation in this industry. It's going to provide great buying opportunities. And for me, that's what I love, because when anyone can throw a dart and make money, they don't need us.
Right.
We have to separate through this stuff. And, you know, we have amazing winners. I mean, Celestica is one that we just sold for, I believe it's a 500% gain, you know, just having great contacts in the industry saying there's no switches. I'm like, what the hell's a switch? And they were like, well, it's like PVC pipe, right? Picture you don't have PVC pipe. You can't live in a house if you don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have, there was a huge shortage. This is one company that got it right. And once they did, they had incredible pricing power. And you have the biggest companies in the world with the deepest pockets are like, I'll order 5 million of those because we need them.
Right.
And this is a company that went from 40 to basically 350. So that's the trends that I want to see. I love the energy part. I still think there's money to be made. I love the retail part of partnering with some of these companies where it's going to benefit them tremendously. And it benefits obviously the Google because now they got access to these clients. They know everything that you're going to do every minute for the rest of your life, which is great that they could sell a fortune to advertisers, which is why Meta and Google are absolutely crushing it. And yeah, there's just different areas that are going to benefit as this trend continues to go on. And it's very, very strong right now.
So let me summarize a few things. Number one, follow this strategy. Invest when governments are investing in something. That's number one.
Absolutely.
Number two, AI is not in a bubble. Energy is going to be a big issue here. look for companies that can supply that energy to the industry and to the world over the next number of years, because it's not going away.
Hold that thought really quick. Yeah. If you want to see when this bubble is going to end, there's one company you look at, very simple, Taiwan Semi. They make all the chips for TSM. Everyone. Yep. You looked at their last quarter, they raised their CAGR, which is a compounded annual growth rate, raised it by another 15% annually to 2029. So they're expecting, instead of 40, they're expecting like 55, 57%. Most companies would be happy with a 12%, 15%. They raised it an extra 15%. These are the companies, this is the company that gets the orders first. So NVIDIA calls them and says, we need a million chips, you know, all the biggest chip companies, right? And then they deliver the chips to NVIDIA, and NVIDIA delivers them to the customers. So you see this chain. That's where it would happen first. If you see Taiwan Semi come out and say, you know what, we're not really seeing the spending as we saw the increase, that's when you know maybe you should take some off the table. Until then, that's the company you need to look at every year.
And by the way, this doesn't mean there's not going to be corrections in between.
Of course.
You know, that's the way markets go. Yeah. So that's two things. We said, you know, the urgent trend of looking at some of the things that are happening now into the future, the CapEx spending, which is going to translate into revenue over time, the reality check that the AI is going to replace jobs. I think we kind of just for a second touched on that, didn't get into it, but that's okay. I want to talk about private credit and then finish up on earnings season, a few different things that are going on. Private credit. All right. So let's kind of discuss this for a second. What is private credit? Well, what it sounds like. It's private credit offering. So it'd be like you lending money to me, Frank, right? That's a private credit transaction. That's a private loan. So we've got this, it's gotten enormous. I think it went from, like in the last 5 years, it went from like $1 trillion, like $3 to $4 trillion of known private credit that's out there right now. And the banks stepped back. They didn't want to offer, you know, the rates weren't what they wanted to lend at. The latest shift is in the way lending is getting done. And the question is private credit, which we've seen a breakdown, by the way. For example, last week was BlackRock TCP, which is a publicly traded company, symbol TCPC. And it disclosed a 19% decline in net asset value for Q4 2025, right? Mm-hmm. Now it trades at about a 25% discount to NAV, and the fund is down about 46%. This is BlackRock, by the way. This isn't just like, you know, ABC ETF fund something or other, right? This is BlackRock. They would hopefully have good lending standards. That's the issue that concerns me. As big as this whole private credit environment got, we have a situation with, did we once again step out of bounds when it came to lending standards? And is this something that could be, it doesn't have to be problematic like a crash of the system, but is the private credit area something that is putting up antennas and kind of making you a little uncomfortable?
It's not making me uncomfortable because it's easy to see this market, and this market is a disaster. So you know, this is the private credit markets exist because this is like, you know, they're going to take on more risky loans, right? With the banks that won't take on these loans. But the private, even though when it comes to private equity and these companies, what they do is, you know, they're leveraging. But when they leverage, they'll take these companies, and these is private credit, right? So the hope is that, you know, we want to have a liquidity period, which is a company going public or it gets taken over. Now, when you have these private equity funds, which is all about private credit, they usually have a pay period of 3, 4, 5 years, and they're sitting on assets on their books that are declining in value, right? So when they're declining in value, they can't get them off the books. There's no liquidity period in sight. And what it's doing with the investors is they're sitting on this dead asset. So what they're doing is, I have someone that's one of the biggest in this industry, has been doing it for 30 years, who's starting funds in the consumer food space, which I love because I'm like, consumer food, you're right. I love when people tell me an idea, like I'm like, you're crazy. And he's like, look, they're sitting on companies that they bought that they're selling for 10 cents on the dollar that they need to get off the balance sheet.
Right.
One, they're going to bring in money, and then they could take that money and leverage it and go into another idea because it's dead money. They don't have that dry powder. And two, they have to get rid of this because their investors are really ticked off because they're sitting on this as something that they used to be able to sell right away, right? And just, you know, take these companies private, fund them, leverage, and then repurpose them, and they IPO at a much higher price, right? And they make fortunes on it. That's not happening now. So it's big. We could see it, though, which is really good. And there's other companies and guys that I know who are very wealthy that are saying, hey, you know what? We're using this as an opportunity to buy these assets dirt cheap, It frees up money for these companies, but I'm never worried about something that you could see. It's the things that you don't see when you didn't know.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, it seems like this is all of a sudden cropping up. We don't see it because we can't see it. That's the problem.
the private nature of this for a while. Like I've been, when I say a while, for like the last year, it's really been bad because this went on steroids after, you know, the government was pumping money like crazy. But now a lot of these things in 20, 21, 22, you're looking at 25, 26, 27, what's going on? Well, we're sitting on these things and you're seeing the value of these assets actually decline now, right? Well, they were worth a lot more. Yeah. And they're like, what are we doing with these? We can't sell them. We're going to take, you know, so they want to get them off their balance sheets. And there's other funds that are taking this and rolling them up and creating SPACs and throwing out this business. And, you know, it's just like,
well, we'll see what's going to happen. I mean, specifically in home improvements, certain tech adjacent borrowers, yes, e-commerce roll-ups, you know, these are the things that are kind of concerning me. And when I say concerning me, you know, I have very little, if no exposure to this for clients. But the question is, what's the knock-on effects in some of the other credit areas? You know, that's something. I mean, the problem is more of a informational, because I think we need to know and have clarity about the functionality of a market and the smooth running of a market in order to make good decisions. I mean, that's the bottom line there. And this is a part, you know, $4 trillion is not a small part of a, you know, small thing. It's a pretty good chunk.
Yeah. And what makes me nervous, by the way, is really housing. Like the housing market, the fundamentals are deteriorating very, very quickly right now. You're seeing a ton of supply come in the market. People can't sell the house. Last month, was it 16, 17% of buyers who signed a contract canceled the contract. I'd never seen that before, right? And you're seeing it because it's not just the interest rates, which you could see, okay, they're higher. It's the insurance, it's the taxes, it's you know, this massive inflation going on, and people
it's
like
the fact that your health insurance cost for me, for example, $1,300 a month for the crappiest insurance you could find.
I know. And how are you, you know, how do you see this huge economic growth and we can get away with tariffs and just manipulate different things and our exports are better now and we're going to see a strong GDP number of 4% next quarter? How do you go long term without housing as that catalyst, which is one of the biggest drives of economic growth? Everybody, you know, you buy furniture, you buy everything, you know. And to me, the housing market is frozen right now, and it's getting worse. And that's one of the things that does worry me.
Let's finish up on the area of earnings and a few other things there. We saw some earnings come out. Banks, pretty good. I mean, banks and the major money centers, generally speaking, yield curve benefited them, trading benefited them, deal flow benefited them. It was just, I mean, I don't know. There was not a lot of holes there that I saw. There was some tick up in as we would think, this following discussion of private credit, of you know, delinquencies on car and credit cards, short term revolvers, etc. But generally speaking, I didn't find any major holes in the financial sector earnings.
Major holes. Let me put it to you this way: the four largest banks generated $117 billion in revenue and over $31 billion in profits.
Right.
For the quarter.
Right. So I'm saying
it is the greatest environment probably in the last 30 years for banks, because we all know if interest rates go higher, they do better. They have the net interest, you know, income. Right. And that was supposed to go down like 2 years ago. Supposed to see rates much lower. And they were all forecasting we're going to see this lower. If you're looking at JP Morgan is forecasting next year to generate $100 billion in NII.
It's amazing.
Their net interest income. And now what do you have? You have economy that's doing well as well. So now they're able to get the investment banking fees and fees on bonds and trading fees. It's just every single line of their business. I feel like I'm looking at a Microsoft.
That's what I'm saying.
Or when they report, like everything's up 25%, it was insane. Like the numbers they're reporting are just insane.
And usually when I say there was no major holes at all, we can always find something in the financials. I couldn't see much. If anything,
the loan loss provisions for every bank have gone down. You would think they would go up. They've gone down. Other than I think it was JP Morgan because they had they took over like, you know, Goldman's credit card and stuff like that.
Right, but so without
that went down as well. Yes.
So then we have industrials. Look at Caterpillar, for example. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously they benefit on the mining and construction to a degree. And industrials did pretty well as well. I mean, we've been starting to see energy start to tick up a little bit here as prices come up. We're starting to see, you know, benefits. I mean, yeah, some of the consumer areas, restaurants, things like that, still, you know, maybe better than expected. I mean, we saw the cruise lines come out last week, Royal Caribbean, guiding up.
How they're guiding up while Las Vegas Sands, Vegas is getting crushed.
I mean, crushed.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Crushed.
I mean, I don't know if you went on vacation lately. I mean, you go to these hotels.
Always.
You walk in and they're like, oh, by the way, it's, you know, $50 a night extra. For what? For whatever. Just because we're charging you that
fee. Because you asked me the question. Now it's 75.
Yeah. It's like, it's for your car. I don't have a car. It's for the refrigerator. I don't have a refrigerator in the room.
Right. No, no, it is nickel and dime. It's gotten terrible. And then you don't get service. Yeah. You don't get maid service unless you beg. Right. I was just in Mexico. Mexico was fine. But, you know, and you got waters.
Airbnb, Vrbo fees. Yep. I mean, what are they up, 20%? It's insane, it's right? So cruises make sense from a family. Makes sense. That's where.
Well, yeah, you know, going to like a Disney, trying to stay on a Disney property. I think we did some number. It was like $5,000 minimum for a week with a family of four.
Yeah, that's without the tickets.
Right. Tech now. We're talking about tech. I mean, we talked about the CapEx and the opportunity there. Pretty good. I don't think we need to beat that one. 74% of companies, as is usually the case, beat EPS earnings. And outlook's relatively good. A lot of guide higher. Interesting, we're seeing some weakness in the SaaS companies, right? The CRMs, the ServiceNows.
AI,
you know,
right?
Well, you know, which they should be utilizing AI. But this goes right back against my entire thesis of AI. So when does Salesforce not do well? Salesforce should be tracking employment. It's a simple strategy, right, to look at this. The more people that are working, the more people are using Salesforce, the more people are paying for Salesforce, et cetera. You know, there's some corporate contracts with unlimiteds, but you know what I'm saying, right? The enterprise contracts. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is Salesforce has been, even with that giant deal they got last week, a $5 billion government deal. Did you see that? Stock still cratered. ServiceNow not doing well. I think there
is ServiceNow, Snowflake,
writing on the wall though that AI is going. I'm not going to stop my belief in this until I see something otherwise. But AI is going to take jobs, and that's okay. Maybe they'll be replaced somewhere else. It's also going to change the education system in the future. People don't necessarily need to. I hate to say what I'm about to say, but think. It's a different situation where you have, you know, if you need to have automated division on something, you know, where you have something and you just, and it automatically tells you what the tip should be. You don't have to do multiplication of what my 15, 18, 20% should be, which by the way, somebody put a 30% suggested tip in front of me last week. I was very aggravated. Let's just say that.
Oh, they just all over. Oh, the best is when I went to Disney and ate, there was a conference next to, what is it? The Disney area that has all the restaurants and stuff like that.
Downtown Orlando, downtown Disney?
Yeah, basically. So I went there and we got tacos for three, for a couple of my workers. And the guy's like, gives me the tip thing. And it's like, you know, it's just 15, 20%, whatever. And he's like, over my shoulder. I'm like, what the hell? So I gave him like, you know, I think I gave him 15%. And then I found out, you know how much it costs? $250 for tacos.
How's that?
Because they charged us 20% gratuity, which he didn't tell me about.
Oh,
and if yeah. Then he put the tip in my face and said, here, 15, 20%.
Well, that's your bed. That's your bed, Frank.
Yeah, that's my fault. But the first thing was just a credit card with the tip. It didn't even say,
Oh, that's the new thing, too. Right. They just give you that blank, like what I order. I don't know. Whatever.
Quick thing before I go, which you mentioned. Please. If you're thinking about buying these software companies, one, you might be better because you're looking at the very, very expensive with Snowflake is like trading like 100 times forward earnings. You got ServiceNow trading at like 30. But Salesforce is 17 if you want to try on that one. However, before you do, go and do some research on Anthropic. We took a Gemini 3.5 right now is the best, right? Based on, you know, these private leaderboards. Anthropic is by far the best when it comes to coding, operating computers, complex tasks, right? So these software developers, this is like financial analysts, consultants, accountants, you know, this is what the CRM systems, right? And very, very expensive. I mean, Salesforce.com is crazy expensive. Anthropic could do this for you now. It does it for you now.
What does what for you? Wait. Back up.
The coding. You don't need to know how to code anymore.
Yeah, that's like Lovable. Have you tried Lovable.ai?
No.
My son was in my office. He said, check this out. He put some prompts in. He said, look, I need a website that does this. It has a form on it. It's that. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Like in an instant. I'm like, that is beautiful.
There's someone that did three prompts and created a video game. It was like snowflakes coming down. They were jumping over the snow. Three prompts. That's, you know, the coding that it would take to do something like that, you could just go in and
Grok. By the way, Grok, the app, if you haven't done this, people, you want to have fun? Download the Grok app, G-R-O-K. That's Elon Musk, X-A-I. The imagery and imagination where you take an image and you just put it into there and it makes it do something. And then you put a prompt like have these people jump up and down, spin around. It literally takes, I'm not kidding, an image that can turn it into whatever you tell it to do. And within less than a minute, it does this. That's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The movie industry. That's why they're all worried.
Do you realize that my computer
is going to take jobs?
Our computers in our office. I have a Mac Daddy of a laptop with and other computers. Do you know how long it would take to generate that kind of 5-10 second clip?
You do that stuff. You create that.
Do you know how long that would take? It's unbelievable.
See it. Unbelievable. Yeah, that's cool.
Unbelievable. My good friend Frank Curzio, Curzio Research. You can find him at CurzioResearch.com. He has some free offerings for sample newsletters, all sorts of things. Check it out. We'll have the links, information on the show notes page of episode number 958 on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Frank Curzio, always wonderful being with you.
Always love coming on the podcast. Always open for you, man. I'll be there for you. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going to end the show right there. We ran a little bit over, of course. When Frank and I talk, we do not stop. And thank you for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal, and past performance is not indicative of future results. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and any guests and may not necessarily reflect those of Horowitz & Company, Inc., an investment advisor registered with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of training or skill. Advisory services are only offered to a client or prospective clients where Horowitz & Company is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Any mention of third-party companies, products, or services is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement. Hypothetical scenarios or forward-looking statements are for illustrative purposes and should not be viewed as guarantees. Content is intended for U.S. residents only and may not be applicable in other jurisdictions. Listeners should consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Please visit our website for additional information, disclosures, as well as a copy of our Form CRS. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.